This is Tell Me More from NPR News. I'm Michelle Martin. We'd like to start the program today by focusing on the top political news of the week, beginning with the resignation of Veterans Affairs Secretary Eric Shinseki. Investigations into the department had revealed that some VA hospitals concealed the number of patients awaiting treatment by creating unofficial wait lists. After weeks of calls from both Democrats and Republicans calling for his resignation, the former General Shinseki stepped down today. Let's listen to President Obama.
In public remarks, he took responsibility for the conduct of those facilities and apologized to his fellow veterans and to the American people. And a few minutes ago, Secretary Shinseki offered me his own resignation. With considerable regret, I accepted.
We've called two people who are going to help us understand what this means and what happens next. Paul Orzelak wrote speeches for President Clinton as well as Al Gore during the 2000 election. He is founder and principal of the strategic communications firm West Wing Writers. Mary Kate Carey was a speechwriter for President George H.W. Bush. She's now a columnist and blogger for U.S. News and World Report, and she's just produced a new documentary, which she'll tell us about in a few weeks. Welcome back to you both. Thank you both so much for joining us.
Thanks
once
for
again.
Having us, Michelle. Thank you.
So let's start with Secretary Shinseki's resignation. There are Democrats and Republicans had both joined calls for his resignation recently. But interestingly, their leaders of both parties had expressed some hesitation about this. So, Paul, I'm going to start with you because I know that you believe that the secretary should have stepped down. And I'd like to ask, you know, why? I mean, it seems like, I know that's a contrarian view, but it seems like this kind of ritualistic, you know, call for somebody to take the fall. How does this fix the problem?
I think General Shinseki was the good soldier to the very end here. You know, even though he took, you know, the military culture is that you take accountability when you're in positions of leadership. And even though it's not clear that he knew about any of this, he took accountability because I think he realized it was becoming too much of a distraction from the work of the department. But will it fix it? If we find somebody that can actually run an organization like this, I would suggest, you know, that we find a former military CEO like Ross Perot Jr. or an Alex Gorsky at J&J or Fred Smith at FedEx who have experience running these big systems, figuring out, you know, how you make it work in a digital age, and then go to work to fixing this, because this has been decades. The primary problem right now, not enough doctors. We've had a 50% increase in caseload the last 3 years, only 9% increase in primary care docs, 400 empty slots. So you have doctors handling 2,000 cases instead of the 1,200 they're supposed to. They're paid 30 to 50% less, so you can't find new primary care doctors. And by the way, all the new graduates are going into specialty care anyway. So there needs to be something that happens to incentivize more doctors.
Mary Kate, what are your thoughts about this? I take it you also agree that the secretary should have stepped down, do you?
Yes.
So tell me how this fixes the problem.
I think it's a first step. The president announced today that the number two guy at the VA, Sloan Gibson, would now move up. The problem with Sloan Gibson is he's only been on the job for, I believe, 3 months. So clearly he's not going to be the permanent answer. I agree with Paul that we need I'd like to add more to the mix of healthcare executives, hospital executives who are used to running huge healthcare systems, I think would be a great way to go. In the past, I know there was always a tradition of having the VA run by a military, but in this case, I think they should consider going beyond that, and I think they should consider doing a total shakeup of some of these 40 healthcare centers across the country that are under investigation. And the president said today that in this audit that caused him to take this action today that he just got in the last few days, the word that everybody's picking up on, the phrase that's making the news, is systemic lack of integrity. And to me, that
shows... What does that mean?
I think that means a deep-seated systemic problem with not enough doctors, with transformation of the system is what needs to take place.
But see, here's my thing, though. Systemic integrity is about character. But what Paul's talking about are system problems, that they were given work that they simply could not do. And rather than say, I can't do this, they
right.
lied.
Right.
So that's a character problem. But if there's a bigger system problem, what's the way to fix that?
I mean, if I were running for a Republican office right now out in the hinterlands, because if you figure 42 hospitals under investigation, it's in almost all 50 states, so it'll be in a lot of Senate and House races. The thing for it's just like Obamacare. You don't want to just say repeal. You want to say repeal and replace.
Yes, exactly.
What's
your alternative? So,
so things I would say, how about in the short run, new leadership across the board at a lot of these places. I'd also see if there was some way to set up a voucher system so that vets who aren't getting seen in 30 days, if you're older than 65, which more than almost half of them are, why can't they get a voucher to go for Medicare? and go to any doctor in the country who takes Medicare. If that doesn't work, how about vouchers to go to the private health care system, just like school choice vouchers are, where you can go to any school and the government will pay a portion of the tuition? Why can't we do that with health care costs for vets who are not getting treated properly?
Is that being talked about? I mean, are these the kind of things the Republican policy folks are talking about?
Yeah, reading all kinds of op-eds and things out there. I think it's a great idea.
Let me just ask, and obviously the focus needs to be on people getting care who just need the care and earn the care through their service. But Paul, I do want to take just briefly and ask about the politics of this. Does the fact that there are both Democrats and Republicans who have been on the record calling for this outcome, does that neutralize the politics or not?
Yes, I think it does. I mean, you saw Bill O'Reilly the other day go after Karl Rove when he was on his program for, you know, the last administration's lack of progress on this. I mean, we're not going to play games with soldiers' lives here. It needs to get fixed. There's some things that Congress can do, and there's some things that the VA can do. The VA can change the policy that said 20% of your bonus is based on you having short wait times. And when there aren't enough doctors, that's the good people operating in a bad system, which is the systemic lack of integrity. Mm-hmm. But, you know, Congress can pass – maybe Congress should think about – loan forgiveness for doctors willing to go into primary care, you know, in the VA, which is a big part of the reason why so many graduates choose specialty care, because they have $250,000 in expenses. Maybe we need to do a better job of integrating the Department of Defense electronic medical records with the VA, so the VA doesn't have to get paper from the Department of Defense every time they check on whether somebody is eligible for care or not.
You were saying when I asked you about the politics of this.
Yeah, I disagree.
What are the politics of this?
I think this is going to be a continuing crisis for the White House. And the president said today in his press conference he's not particularly interested in transforming the entire system. He wants to tackle the short-term problems first. He was very vague on referring criminal investigations to the Department of Justice. And I think the problem perception-wise is it's not hard for voters to connect the dots between the VA and Obamacare, because these are the only two cabinet officers to have resigned during the Obama term have to do with government-run health care problems. And I think that's not a jump for people to make the association of, if this is how the VA is being run, is that what we're facing under Obamacare?
Obamacare is in government-run health care. You know, 98% of the coverage is through the private sector.
So far.
Well,
if you're just joining us, we're talking about the latest in politics. Speaking of the power of words, with former presidential speechwriters Mary Kate Carey and Paul Orszag. So let's talk. We only have a couple of minutes left, but let's talk about another issue, which is the president announced on Tuesday that less than 10,000 troops will remain in Afghanistan after combat operations end in December. Half of them will remain in 2015. By the end of 2016, there will be only a small group of soldiers left in the country. He talked at length at the U.S. Military Academy's commencement at West Point on Wednesday. He talked about his administration's approach to foreign policy. And I have a clip. It's fairly lengthy, but I want to play it because it kind of encapsulates this. He talked with my colleague Steve Inskeep immediately after the speech.
The kinds of issues, though, that dominate the headlines, a conflict in Syria, a Russian incursion into Ukraine, the kidnapping of 200 young girls in Nigeria. In those circumstances, we are going to be most effective when we use a wide range of tools, diplomacy, sanctions, appeals to international law. In some cases, a judicious use of military force may make sense, but in those circumstances, it has to be in a multilateral system where other countries are participating.
Well, okay, so Paul, you're the Democrat, and so I'm going to ask you to translate. What is he saying, first of all, and what does this speech accomplish?
Well, I think the speech set in place his position right now to define what we've been about, what we're going forward. You know, there's a difference between military might and moral authority, and the United States has used both over the last 60 years to advance our goals. Military might has come into play to ending two wars, which is what he did. It's, you know, he's helped chase al-Qaeda out of Pakistan, Yemen. But, you know, there are all these other issues, Syria, East Ukraine, where America's moral authority can come into play to help rally people to support. And there's a feeling that he hasn't done enough of that. But, you know, frankly, his foreign policy is exactly where the American people have been the last 5 years. This is what we want. We want a less interventionist, you know, country after a decade of war. The problem is you know,
well, if this is what the American people already want, why does he have to articulate it? What is the again? It goes back to
Russia.
What is his purpose?
Because I think Russia, I think the fact of Russia being involved in the last crisis, in the current crisis, changes the dynamic, because Russia is part of a very different storyline for the United States and its history in the last 75 years. The second Russia looks like it's doing something, it makes, you know, us look strong or weak by comparison. What are you doing in response? People weren't, you know, as tragic as Syria is, people weren't ginned up. Russia is something that we understand, and it is defining this in a way that other things, you know, haven't. South China Sea, for example. I mean, those are more remote, but, you know, Russia going into Ukraine feels very Cold War, and that is the standard on which this is being evaluated right now, which I don't think is fair, because we're doing more and more places around the world than any administration in history right now, in places that we haven't, in Africa, in Burma, in, you know, Latin America. So
do you think the speech succeeded? Did he do anything? Did he accomplish anything?
Well, I think the speech, you know, it sussed out his critics and gave them an excuse to focus on what we're not doing rather than what we've done. But, you know, it's a different time right now. And, you know, the president is doing good around the world, and his critics will continue to hit him. But
Mayor Kate, I have to give you the last word. What did the president accomplish anything in your view?
I think the West Point speech is just one more example of him trying to strike a rhetorical balance and setting up words, a framework that works. And yet the contrast between his words and his lack of follow-up is jarring in time after time after time. Afghanistan, Ukraine, Syria, Iran. He's done this many times, and it's a massive disconnect that leads to the perception of weakness.
Mary Kate Carey was a speechwriter for President George H.W. Bush. She's now a blogger and columnist for U.S. News and World Report. Paul Arzelak was a speechwriter for President Clinton. He's the founder of West Wing Writers. They were both here in our Washington, D.C. studios. Thank you both so much for speaking.
Thank you.
Us.
Thanks, Rob.